right, thank you. So just a little bit about myself. I am Mia Cowan. I was born and raised here in Birmingham, Alabama. Actually trained at the Medical College of Wisconsin for my medical school training, as well as doing my residency in OBGYN at the Medical College of Wisconsin in Milwaukee. I did my undergraduate work at the University of Alabama, got a bachelor's in biology and a master's in health education and promotion. And then I was silly enough to go back to school and get my MBA because I knew I wanted to open my own practice, and you know, they don't teach us that whole business part of medicine. So basically what I did was I opened a practice called Mibella Wellness Center, and there I do gynecology for women and adolescents. And then I do weight loss for men and women, and I do a lot of other aesthetic procedures for men and women. So, we're going to talk a little bit about screening and prevention, and I will tie some information in for males as well as females, but of course, I'm a little biased because I'm a gynecologist, so I tend to speak a little bit more from the female perspective. Screening and prevention. Some of the major screenings that we all should be getting is we should at least be going to the doctor once a year, right? Once you're 50 years old, you should be having your colonoscopy as frequently as your doctor tells you to. Ladies should be having a mammogram. Actually, the new guidelines are that women should have mammograms starting now at the age of 50 every 2 years. So some people are still getting them once a year. And then, of course, if you have a history of breast cancer or anything like that, or a strong family history, you do what your doctor recommends. For men, prostate screening starting at the age of 40 with a digital prostate exam as well as their PSA studies, okay? So the prostate antigen. And then we're going to talk a lot about obesity because, as many of you know, Alabama is one of the most obese states in the United States of America, and now obesity has become the second most preventable cause of death, the first being smoking, and we're predicting that in the next few years, obesity will actually be number one. And then we're going to talk a lot about wellness so that you know some things that you can do so that you can maintain your health. So again, the breast cancer screening, we talked about clinical breast exams you should get when you go see your gynecologist, as well as when you, or if you see a primary care doctor for your annual gynecology visit, but you should be getting a clinical breast exam. And then some people don't recommend the self breast exams. I personally teach all of my patients how to do them, especially now since we are finding breast cancer in much younger women and it's before they're actually screened with mammograms. So I teach starting from my adolescents at 18, I teach them how to do their breast exams, and I recommend that everybody continue to do that. And I recommend doing it laying flat as well as sitting straight up. I recommend that you do it once a month around the same time of the month. If you're no longer having cycles, you can pick a day, the 1st, the 15th, or the 30th. And you're looking for hard lumps that don't move and changes. So the best time to do your first exam is when you go see your doctor and you have one done, you have your mammogram, you know that's what's normal for you, and you can recognize change. So please do your self-breast exams. I would rather my patients overdiagnose than underdiagnose. Cervical cancer screening, that's been the big topic of the century because now they're recommending less cervical cancer screening. As many of you know, cervical cancer is caused by that virus called human papillomavirus. Every woman and man who's ever sexually active will be exposed to that virus at some point. It's quite rampant in the population, but the good news is that you hardly ever hear of anyone in America having cervical cancer because the Pap smear screening prevents cervical cancer. So by having regular screenings, and you find you a provider that you trust and go along and y'all come up with a plan for your screening. Now they're saying every 2 to 3 years, but one thing is for sure, screening does not start before the age of 21. So when my teenagers come in, I let them relax and let them know that if you're under the age of 21, there will be no speculum exams and we don't have to send cells to pathology. Everything that I need to do for an adolescent, I can do through urine and without an uncomfortable exam. Women over the age of 65 who have a history of negative pap smears and don't have a history of abnormal pap smears can actually stop having a pap smear. But remember, when you go to the gynecologist, that's not the only thing that's being done. Not only are we doing the pap smear to make sure you never get cervical cancer, but we're also feeling the size of the uterus, we're feeling the ovaries, we're looking at the outside, and we're looking at the inside. So even though you may not need a pap smear, you still should see a gynecologist for your pelvic exams once a year. And women over the age of 30, they're recommending starting every 3 years because we do another screening with that pap smear that tells us whether that woman is HPV positive or negative. If someone's HPV negative, they can have a pap smear every 2 to 3 years. If it's positive, they continue annually, and then starting at the age of 21 up until 30 before we start doing the HPV screening, those ladies should be having pap smears once a year. And everybody understands that the pap smear is where we take a sample from the cervix, send it to pathology. It comes back as abnormal or normal. If it's abnormal, it's not a big deal to have an abnormal pap smear. It means that our screening tool is doing its job. And if it's abnormal, we do further testing to make sure that that woman never gets cervical cancer. So I always remind my patients, if I call you back for an abnormal pap smear, it happens. Don't be nervous. Don't lose any sleep. As long as you get your pap smears regularly and follow up after an abnormal pap, you will never get cervical cancer, and that's the goal, okay? We talked about the colorectal screening. Screening rates have increased significantly, but even though some of the screening rates have increased, we're still seeing more cancer. So cervical cancer screening is about at 83%, so that's one of the highest screenings that we're doing, which is why we're not seeing the cervical cancer. And don't forget about your colonoscopies. They're so important because just like the cervical cancer screening with the pap smear prevents cervical cancer, the screening with the colonoscopy prevents colon cancer. Because what happens is when they look inside, if they see polyps, they can remove them before they turn into cancer. Those are recommended every 5 to 10 years, depending on your family history and depending on the type of exam that was done. So starting at the age of 50, unless there is a family history of colon cancer, and then you would start about 5 years before that person was diagnosed in a first degree relative, like your parents or your siblings. Obesity. So again, the second most preventable cause of death, and we define obesity by a number called body mass index, which is basically a calculation that includes your height and your weight. It's not different for anybody because they're a certain race or because they have big bones. Less than 25, your normal weight. 25 to 29.99, you're overweight. 30 to 39.99, you're obese. 40 and over would be morbidly obese, meaning needing to lose at least 100 pounds. Okay, and we'll talk about how to do that. But the things that we want to recognize is that by avoiding obesity, we can improve our long-term health. Okay. In 50 years, obesity will shorten the average lifespan of 77.6 years by at least 2 to 5 years. So we will be the first generation, this generation now will be the first generation to likely live less time than their parents. And a lot of that can be contributed to obesity. So again, those numbers that we talked about, so you can see it written. And to calculate your body mass index, you can pretty much go to any website and get your true body mass index to determine whether or not you're at a good weight that you need to maintain or whether you need to lose a few pounds to improve your health. And you can probably read that in your handout or probably not. It's really small, but it just gives everyone an idea. So if you're 5'5", for you to be normal weight, you should weigh under 152 pounds, okay? And so it's completely defined by weight and height. Some women, and men, I say men, it may be a little differently because men do have more muscle, and so some of the younger guys who've done bodybuilding and that sort of thing, it's hard for them to be at a BMI of less than 25, but we can still look at their fat percentage and their waist circumference to make sure they're still at a healthy weight. So Alabama trend, so this is the, you know, what everybody already knows. There are only about 37% of Alabamians that are actually normal weight. The other 64%+ or 63%+ are either overweight, obese, or morbidly obese. So that's where our biggest issues come in Alabama with our health. Health diseases that are caused by obesity include arthritis, birth defects, cancers, including breast, colon, gallbladder, ovarian and especially endometrial. Cardiovascular disease, what's the number one killer in America? Cardiovascular disease, we all forget that, and obesity plays a huge part in that. Carpal tunnel syndrome, daytime sleepiness, people who are obese tend to have sleep apnea more commonly, and those people don't sleep well if they don't use their CPAP machines, so they tend to be tired all of the time because they cannot get a good restful sleep. Deep vein thrombosis, so basically blood clots are increased in obese people, mainly because they don't move around as well and their clotting factors are off. Gallbladder disease, gout, heart disorders, hypertension. I go through all of these just to remind us the importance of maintaining a healthy weight. Impaired immune system, impaired respiratory function, wound infections, infertility is huge. I see that all the time. And it's worsened in women who are overweight or obese. Liver disease, low back pain. I mean, that's one of the fatigue and low back pain. That's a major reason that people go see a physician. And a lot of that can be decreased with maintaining a healthy weight. Pain, pancreatitis, we talked about sleep apnea, stroke, surgical complications. People who are obese or morbidly obese are more likely to have complications associated with surgery. And then people who are obese tend to have more incontinence or leakage of urine. So we talked about the leading causes of death. Heart disease is number one, and we don't ever want to forget that. So we want to make sure. Another thing that I always stress to my ladies, since I've been working with the American Heart Association a lot more, I'm paying a lot more attention to primary care issues. So I have all of my women, once they reach menopause, whether it's done surgically because they had a hysterectomy and their ovaries were removed, or because they naturally went into menopause because of age, I have them to go get an initial cardio workup. Because once estrogen is not naturally around in your body, your heart ages, and you're more likely to experience cardiovascular events. And remember, ladies, we don't present like men. So, you know, you may not have left-sided chest pain that radiates to your arm. You may be nauseous that day and just not feel well, and you could be having a heart attack. So I have all of my women to go get that initial cardiovascular workup, and then they can work with the cardiologist to determine how frequently they need to be worked up with their heart. Strokes are the third leading cause of death, and then it goes all the way down to Alzheimer's. So, who's at risk for heart disease? Controllable risk factors. If you have high cholesterol, take your medications. Some natural things that you can do for cholesterol would be, I tell all of my patients, if you're over 40, just go ahead and take your omega-3. Get a good omega-3. It helps with inflammation, it's cardioprotective, and it helps with cholesterol, so it helps to lower triglycerides. High blood pressure. If you have high blood pressure, even though you feel good, remember it's the silent killer, and it can cause heart disease. So if you have high blood pressure and your doctor is recommending that you take blood pressure medication, please take it, because that's a controllable factor. Even though you may have hypertension, if you control it, it'll still decrease your risk for heart disease. Physical inactivity. Sometimes it's difficult for us to exercise for different reasons, but most of us can do something. It doesn't mean you have to go to the gym and spend an hour and a half there, but if you're active, if you can do 30 minutes 4 to 5 times a week, even if you have to break your 30 minutes up, if you need to do 15 minutes in the morning, 15 minutes in the afternoon, if you're healthy and your physician says it's okay once you're over the age of 25, because we lose so much muscle each year, I always recommend doing resistance training, and especially for my postmenopausal women, to help hold on to the bone that you have and decrease your risk of osteoporosis and fractures, I recommend strength training and resistance training exercises as well, which can be with weights, or it could be with cans, or it can be wall push-ups, it could be squats, whatever you can tolerate, but do some kind of resistance training. Pilates, yoga, all of that is resistance training. You can control being overweight or obese, and that's a controllable risk factor for heart disease, though it gets more difficult to lose weight as we age. We can still all lose weight, and of course, if you need some help with that, I'll be happy to help. Type 2 diabetes, I mean, you know, sometimes it's genetic, but many times if you look at the average person with type 2 diabetes, they're usually at least overweight. So by controlling your diabetes, taking your medications, and then even more than that, losing weight, it will decrease your risk of diabetes as well as heart disease. And then smoking. Stopping smoking is one of the hardest things to do. I understand if somebody's been smoking for a very long time, but we have some wonderful smoking cessation programs around in the area. But remember, that's the number one most preventable cause of death. So we definitely want to stop smoking if we are. Things we cannot control. We can't control getting older. The older we get, the more likely we are to have heart disease. We can't control our family history. But if you look at your family history, many times there are still controllable behavioral factors that have caused people in your family to have heart disease. My dad has heart disease. He's thin, but he smokes cigarettes. So I expect that he would have heart disease. But it doesn't mean that I'm going to get heart disease because I'm not going to smoke cigarettes and I'm going to try to maintain a healthy weight. And I say that because some people are like, well, I just have a bad family history, so no matter what I do, I'm going to die soon anyway. But pay attention to the behaviors that these people in your family had and try to change them and make healthier behaviors so that these things don't affect you as much. And then race, of course, African Americans die from everything sooner. So if you're African American, you're more likely to get heart disease. But if you think about that, again, African Americans are more likely to be overweight. You know, African Americans are more likely to be at a lower socioeconomic status, so all of those things play a part. So how can we decrease our risk? I've told you all of your risk and all that, so what can we do to decrease our risk? One, eat a healthy diet. Now, I don't agree with the first statement, and I've changed that with my studying. It says eat a healthy diet low in fat. Eat healthy fat. We need fat for just about everything that our body needs to produce. So this new, if you think about it, people became more obese when we started a low-fat, high-carb diet. It's probably the worst thing we did. We teach our diabetics to do it. You do need some fat. You need to monitor your calories, but you do need healthy fat. You don't want to use margarine. If you're going to use something, use butter. Your body does not process trans fats well, so you're not really doing yourself a favor by using the fake butters. Olive oil is a great oil. You want to monitor the amount that you're using, but you want to make sure you're getting some healthy fat in your diet. Keep your weight under control, which is easier said than done, and I will give you some of my little tips on how to make that a little bit easier for you. Staying physically active, I say 30 minutes on most days of the week, so that'll give you 4 days. If you can exercise for 30 minutes, 4 days a week, you're doing something to improve your health. Controlling your blood pressure, and now the new standard is less than 125 over 85, so if you're going to the doctor and your blood pressure is 130s over 80s, you should be probably on a blood pressure medication if diet alone does not change that, because even that blood pressure has shown to increase the risk of stroke as well as heart disease. If you have diabetes, we want it even lower than that, okay? Controlling your blood pressure, cholesterol levels, managing your blood sugars if you have diabetes, going to the doctor, getting regular checkups. We don't know if we have a problem, if we're not being screened, and talking to your doctor about prevention plans, not smoking, and avoiding secondhand smoke as well. So Go Red just basically tries to educate the community on ways that women can decrease this huge risk of heart disease that we're seeing. So all those things that we just talked about will help us to do that and participate in the campaign. It's on your sheet if you're interested. They send out great ticks with wonderful health information, so you can always sign up for those ticks. So since I'm a weight loss specialist, and I actually became a weight loss specialist because I have struggled with my weight since I was in college. I think I've been on a diet. And then I was a little bit older when I had my first child, and I gained 60 pounds when I was already in the overweight range. So I guess my BMI was probably at least 27 or 28 when I got pregnant with 60 more pounds. I don't even know where that put me, and I don't want to talk about it. But that encouraged me. And then I had so many patients who would come to me, and I would say, well, you know, we could fix this abnormal bleeding if you would just lose some weight. Or we could do this if you would just lose some weight. And they would say, well, Dr. Cowan, how do I lose weight? And I'm sitting up there, you know, overweight. And I didn't know how to tell them to lose weight. So I went to a special training program called the Center for Medical Weight Loss, and it trains physicians on behavior modification and weight loss techniques that they can use for their patients. So I did that, learned a lot, started doing my own programs, and I lost weight along with my patients. So some of the things I recommend that everybody do, what's the most important meal of the day? Don't answer. That's right. And when is breakfast? Thank you. Have you been in one of my talks? I'm just kidding. So breakfast is within 1 hour of waking up. So I always tell my patients, when you first wake up, look at the clock. If you wake up at 6:30, you should have some kind of breakfast by 7:30, okay? I recommend that you drink half of your weight in ounces of water. So for example, if you weigh 200 pounds, you should be drinking 100 ounces of water every day. So drinking half of your weight in ounces of water. And to make that easy, if you break it up over your meals, because you should be eating 5 small meals a day, starting with breakfast within that hour of waking up, and then you should be eating every 2.5 to 3 hours. The purpose of all of this, several different purposes. One, eating frequently keeps your metabolism going. Two, eating frequently keeps you from getting hungry. So when you're not in a starved state, you're more likely to make good decisions. When you're in a starved state and you haven't eaten for 6 hours, when you get off work, the first thing you're gonna do is go to a fast food restaurant. Then you're spending your money, so you wanna get something you enjoy. So then you get the burgers and the fries, and then it comes with this big soda. So you just put yourself in this bad situation. So eating frequently so that you don't get hungry, to keep your metabolism up as well. So eating 5 to 6 small meals per day and every 2 to 3 hours. Eat within 1 hour of waking up. We talked about that. And protein is our friend. Fat is, again, no longer our enemy. We just want to moderate how much we're eating. So you want to eat healthy fat. You do want a little bit of saturated fat that you get from your animal. The one fat that we want to avoid would be the trans fat. But unsaturated fat, you know, less of the saturated fat, and you definitely want to get your omega-3s in with your fish. You can get fat not only from your oils and your butter, but you can also get the healthy fat from your almonds and your olives and your avocados, okay? Weighing regularly, I think that's most important. You don't know if you've gained weight if you don't get on the scale, and I know so many people have an aversion to the scale. They don't want to get on it, they don't want to see what they weigh. Well, the only way you know you've gained weight is if you're weighing regularly. So I personally weigh every day. That may be obsessive, okay? But I recommend that you weigh at least once a week, and that way if you gain a couple pounds, it's easy to lose a couple, but if you look up and you gain 20, the goal seems so much farther away that you may become discouraged. So weighing regularly, exercising, 150 minutes per week is what they say will help you to maintain weight. They give you an actual number and you can break that up however you want to break it up. And then drinking your water before you start eating and with your meal. So many of the things our parents taught us not to do, we should be doing. Remember, they used to make you put your drink away so that you didn't have anything to drink while you were eating so you could eat more food. Well, I teach my patients the opposite. Start off drinking 5 to 10 ounces of your water before you even start eating, and make sure you drink water with each swallow so that you're not just filling up on calories, but the water is helping you to understand that you're satisfied before you overeat. And it also slows you down. If you eat really quickly, you don't realize you're satisfied until 20 minutes later, and then you're miserably full and you're like, why did I eat all that food, you know? Well, it's because you ate so quickly that you didn't have time for the signals to go from your stomach to your brain and back. So with the Center for Medical Weight Loss Program, the one that I was trying to do, which I have tweaked quite a bit since starting it, because I guess my practice opened in November of 2010, so I had my big group of pilot patients that I learned a lot on, and they paid a lot less, and then I continued over time, and just me with my personal experiences and all my different patients with different personalities, we focus on the behavior modification, which I think is key. And I tell all of my patients, don't blame yourselves. Guess who you can blame for your weight problems? Your parents, because they never taught us how to eat the right way. It never used to be an issue because we didn't have the transportation that we have. Now people walked, people were more active, people ate healthier foods with fewer hormones, and we didn't have as much fast food as we have today. So since times have changed, we have to change our behaviors along with it. So in conclusion, please make sure you're following the screening guidelines and seeing your physician and, you know, figuring out what's going to work best with you. Some of my patients, I have all kinds of patients. I have the granola patients who don't want to have anything that's unnatural. They don't want their mammograms because they don't want the extra radiation. So find a physician that will work with you and educate you appropriately so that both of you can make good decisions about your health. Maintaining a healthy BMI, again, is easier said than done. regular exercise, a healthy diet, and really if you're trying to lose weight or even maintain weight, counting calories is key. I wish I had this magic tool that I could tell you about that could just make you lose weight, but the bottom line is no matter what my patients use to help make the journey easier, the people who lose weight are the ones that are journaling and counting their calories, and they know what their metabolism is, so they know exactly how many calories they need to eat and they stick to it. Weighing regularly and then monitoring your salt intake, especially if you already have high blood pressure. So we kind of talked about what I do at Mi Bella Wellness Center. I'll actually give out some brochures so that you can see what I do. Now I have to make a disclaimer and I'll say it in a second. And that's it. Thank you so much for your attention.
I am postmenopausal.
Okay.
And with that, I noticed within the first 5 years, more of a challenge. Same calories, same exercise, more of a challenge. Why is that?
Starting at about the age of 25, you start losing about a half a pound of muscle a year. So by the time you're in your menopausal phase of life, not only have you lost a lot of muscle, but losing the muscle actually slows your metabolism. So things that we were able to do 10 years ago, we can no longer do because of the loss of muscle and the change in our metabolism. So I get a lot of perimenopausal women, so meaning they're having symptoms of going through the change, like hot flashes, their cycles may be unregulated and they're not having as many, all the way to my postmenopausal women who come in very flustered by this new weight gain. And sometimes it can be 10 to 15 pounds and you look up, you know, in a few months and you've gained the 15 pounds. So what I recommend for that group would be to do the resting metabolic rate test. That's a machine that I have in my office and other people have it too. You come in fasting 4 hours from food and caffeine. You breathe in that machine and from your CO2, it would tell me your exact resting metabolism. I put that number in my computer program along with our goals and some other information about your activity level, and it'll tell me exactly how many calories you need to eat, and you need to eat. And you can be the same size, same age, same weight, same height as somebody and have a totally different metabolism. So what may work for them may not work for you. So that resting metabolic rate test tells us a lot, but the change in our hormones also affect the metabolism and slow it. So we just need to know how many calories to eat. And it is a lot less than when we were 20.
And what do you do?
And so when they do the test, I write out an eating plan and I teach them how to eat, making sure they have nice balanced meals with good lean protein, healthy fat, and non-starchy carbohydrates. I teach them how to count their calories, how to look up their calories, and how to measure and weigh. I mean, it is a lot of, most of us have probably done Weight Watchers at some point, and a lot of that stuff gets old, but the bottom line is you don't know how many calories you're eating if you're not measuring, weighing, and journaling. So it's the hard way. But we have plenty of help aids to make it easier.
Are any of your weight loss programs covered under insurance if you have other medical problems like high blood pressure or cholesterol?
You would think, and her question was, are any of the weight loss programs covered under insurance? And unfortunately not. My programs are pretty affordable. You know, you come in for a weight loss consult, it's $49. You get your body composition analysis, which is where you stand on my fancy machine that'll tell me your muscle mass, your fat percentage, your water percentage. Muscle and fat percentage would be the most important. And that's what I tell my patients. I'm like, I know you don't like this machine today, but in a month, you'll love this machine because you'll see your numbers going the way you want. So that information, the information that I give on the consult, and then a lot of women will do, and men, will do the resting metabolic rate test. That test is $100, and some people will do it on their own, and then I have all kinds of programs that have meal replacements and that don't, or that just focus on calories, or, you know, what. And so I design a program and customize it to that individual's budget and personality with food.
Can you self-refer?
Yes, and I'm taking new patients. I'll leave y'all all of my information for gynecology, weight loss, and aesthetics. So, I have some brochures, and I have some cute little mirrors and cards. So, here you go.
What is
Less than.
I've only worked with kids.
Right. So what I say is, they say if your fasting is less than 100 is normal, and then you become borderline when it's slightly over 100 to 120, you know. But.
They were a family member was counting, I think, 50, and I was
50
as being normal.
Oh, that's low. Yeah, it's and it depends on if it's fasting or postprandial too. So if it's after you eat, if it's I always do it the way I did when I did obstetrics, because the guidelines are more strict for pregnant patients. So I would always say if in 1 hour it should be less than 140, in 2 hours, and meaning 1 hour after you eat, it should be less than 140, 2 hours after you should be less than 120. Fasting should be less than 100, but a lot of people go up to 120. But I think the biggest thing I've been seeing is I've been getting a lot of diabetics that come in for weight loss because they're sick of paying for all the medication and taking it. And I'm finding that a lot of them are not getting any direction on how to eat, which is plays the biggest part in diabetes, and it's so unfortunate. So I would recommend that if you know somebody with diabetes or you have diabetes, to make sure you see a dietitian or a nutritionist or me.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Is there anything special you should do if you have low blood sugar? Like mine's on fasting, is like 30-something.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I know you're supposed to eat smaller meals
and more frequently. Mm-hmm. But a lot of that may have to do with some of the insulin resistance and what you're eating. So if you're eating a higher carb diet, you tend to drop your sugars a little bit lower. Mm-hmm. Which is one of the things I always recommend, is to minimize your especially starchy carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all the good stuff, the bread, the rice, the pasta. Yeah, so by minimizing that, you may notice that you don't get as much of a drop and your blood sugar stay more steady. Yeah.